Actually, with
Thank you,
that
Tony.
said, Chair Mattern, I have asked Mike or delegated that over to Mike. So Mike will be doing screen sharing here shortly.
Okay.
And Mike will be rolling through. So if you got questions, you want to go back and forth, it'll be Mike that you'll have to ask to jump back and forth. So thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and get started. I'll call the Willmar Municipal Utility Meeting Commission meeting to order. Today is Monday, November 23rd, and due to the rise in COVID cases, we are back to our Zoom platform. I've been informed by legal counsel that we do not have to continue on with reading the official legal notice, but that is published with the agenda as well. So I appreciate everybody coming back to the Zoom meeting. And we do, for everybody's reference and for the record, we do have a fill-in for legal counsel. And at today's meeting, we have Ms. Harrington on the line with us as well. So with that, does anybody have any changes to the agenda? If not, we'll move into the consent agenda, which consists of the minutes from the November 9th meeting, as well as bill payments in the amount of roughly $1.6 million. General Manager Herron, is there anything in bill payments that you'd like to point out this time around?
No, Commissioner Chair, I do not. Pretty much routine, unless there's questions. Again, we have the capital projects highlighted in yellow.
All right, looks pretty straightforward. I had a chance to review that as well. With that, Commissioners, I'd be looking for a resolution to go ahead and approve the consent agenda.
So I'll move. This is Carol.
Second, Zuck.
This is Rose.
I heard a resolution from Commissioner Lahmer and a second from Commissioner Maboub. Is there any discussion or questions on the resolution?
Nope.
All right, hearing none, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Maboub?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
That resolution passes. Thank you. All right, next on the agenda, I'm going to turn this one over to our Labor Committee Chair, Commissioner Weber. We have an update on the November 12th Labor Committee meeting.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We did have a meeting on November 12th, started at 12 p.m. Three items that we discussed. The first one was concerning some what we're calling customer concerns. Some members of the Labor Committee had received some anonymous letters pointing out some issues. We did talk about them. We shared them with the other commissioners that were present. We brought in John, General Manager Herron, shortly after giving ourselves a little update. And it was a consensus of the committee that no specific action can be taken on these issues because of the anonymous nature. We went on to talk about our health insurance moving into 2021, and the current provider is showing a significant increase in rates and premiums. The lowest cost option and quote that we got back was from Blue Cross Blue Shield. So the committee voted and recommended to switch to Blue Cross and Blue Shield moving forward into 2021. The third item was some union negotiations update. I mentioned this in our previous meeting that Labor Committee met with the union and discussed the labor contract moving forward. The committee and the union did reach an agreement at the Labor Committee and the committee that the union brought forward on that day. However, since then, the entire union membership voted on that agreement and did not ratify the agreed upon proposed contract. So with that said, we are going to go back to negotiations, and we've got meetings scheduled for the first week of December. After that, we adjourned and the meeting ended at 1:23 p.m. So any questions on what happened with Labor Committee in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah, Commissioner Webner, I thought we also talked about the moral of the staff and, you know, although this anonymous letter is but some sort of survey to see how the things stand, you know, in terms of the overall staff, just to get feel how the thing is going. And would that supposed to be part of the minutes, or is there some additional thing that we want to, you know, share with rest of the commissioners?
That is correct. We did talk about that. We did not put those in the minutes. We were going to table that, I guess, for a different explanation and revisit how we proceed with, as you say, the morale and a survey of some sort. So that is in the works. It is not in the minutes as such.
Thank you for
Robert, do you want me to expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. All right, thank you. Commissioner Mabu, you're correct. My understanding was that the Labor Committee was asking staff to do a follow-up and inform the Labor Committee at our earliest convenience when we can have additional meetings to talk about that, but inform the Labor Committee on what the survey, past survey results were, and formulate a survey for the next survey for staff to take. So we have that on our agenda of things to do. Next time we meet, we'll be talking about those survey results and rolling out an additional survey.
Okay, thank you.
For clarity, General Manager Heron and Commissioner Weber, in moving forward with some kind of a survey along those lines, is it appropriate to tie that in with the kind of the time frame as to when the commission does their self-evaluation and the evaluation for the general manager as well?
It would be appropriate, yes.
Just something to consider, I guess, as you continue that discussion. Yeah. All right, thank you for the update on that. Go ahead, Commissioner Weber.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna submit for motion the minutes as I have discussed. For approval.
So I second that.
All right. So I have a motion from Commissioner Weber and a second from Commissioner Mabub to approve the minutes as presented. Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take a roll on that, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Weber.
Aye.
DeBleek.
Aye.
Magnuson.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Mattern.
Aye.
Lahmer.
Aye.
Mabu.
Aye.
That motion carries. Thank you. Along with that, we're looking for an approval for the health insurance provider changes. General Manager Heron, maybe I could have you run through a little bit more detail on that, please.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Matter. Andrew, did you want to field that question? As you did most of the research on it. Otherwise, I can take it if you want me to.
Run through it, that's fine. So in the sheet that you can see there on the screen, we have option one, which is with our current health partners provider. By industry standards, we're now considered small group. So those have changed our rates. This spreadsheet shows the new details of the plan, which we highlighted increases. You know, like the out-of-network, the deductible, and the co-insurance, so significant, I would say, decreases in coverage. Option two shows the Blue Cross Blue Shield plan through Southwest West Central Service Co-op, which has very comparable coverage as we have today. So that just breaks out the details there. So, John, if you have anything else to add, go ahead.
No, we'll go to the next page, Mike, please.
So page two is the breakout for staff, and this is the family coverage. It shows the different insurance contributions for each employee on the family. And it includes a 50% increase in the premium and compares it to the 2020 contribution by the employee. So you can just see the differences in this year's premium compared to what it will be in 2021.
And if I can expand on that a little bit, Andrea, that 50% that Andrea mentioned, that 50% has to do with the dependent cost increase. By our policy, we as employees are responsible for half of the increase, and the employer is responsible for the other half of the increase. So thank you, Andrea.
Thank you for that information and the update. I had asked for an overall summary on what we are spending on health insurance premiums. And we are putting forth roughly $750,000 just in health insurance benefits. So it's, I mean, it's a significant figure for sure. And of course, we're suffering what many out there are suffering with these increases. They just continue to go up. So all right, so we at this point, we would be looking for a motion to approve the health insurance provider change for 2021.
This is Carol, so I'll move.
I'll second that.
All right, I have a motion from Commissioner Lahmer and a second from Commissioner Weber. I believe that's who I heard on that one.
Correct.
All right, any discussion on this motion?
It's still fortunate for our employees to have the utilities paying for half the dependent coverage. So unfortunately, it's going to cost them more though too.
It is. All right. Hearing no further, was there somebody that was going to chime in there? Nope. Okay. Hearing no further discussion, Ms. Mathiasen, if you could take roll in the motion, please.
Certainly. Commissioner DeBleek.
Aye.
Magnuson.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Mattern.
Aye.
Lahmer.
Aye.
Mabou.
Aye.
Weber.
Aye.
Thank you.
All right, that motion passes. Thank you. All right, next on the agenda, we have the Missouri River time of use rates beginning in 2023. General Manager Herron.
Thank you, Chair Mattern. On the first page, I'm not going to read the page, but I'd like to point out a couple things. On the first page, thank you, Mike. Previous board action to promote the rates. There, I'd like to point out the timeline. The board started talking about time of use rates in 2011. And over the course of years, you can see the different board actions that were taken leading up to where we are today. Next page, please, Mike. Here, retail time of use rates. I'd like to point out there, they note that that's optional. What that means, we have the option just because at wholesale level that we are paying a time of use rate does not mean we need to implement that with our customers. That's optional for us. With that said, about two meetings back when we first received notice that they were talking about it and looking at implementing it, I had noted that we have a placeholder in the rate study queue for late 2022-23 to look at our rates again as our current ordinance goes through 2022 for both water and electric. So timing would be about perfect for us to look at our rates again to see if we want to implement any form of time of use to our customers. I know we do have some customers that are looking forward to time of use rates as they feel that there will be a savings for them in their energy purchases. Next page, Mike, please. That's good. Thank you, Mike. Anticipated customer costs right on top. What's it going to cost us? When Missouri River completed the rate study, their rate consultant was instructed to keep revenue from a wholesale perspective, from a company perspective, neutral. However, with that said, with 61 members, you're going to have some that will pay more, some that will pay less. In our case, because of our load factor, we are going to be paying slightly more. So based on 2019 data, when the rate consultant completed the rate study for Missouri River, we are looking at about a $13,000 increase in our wholesale rate. So if we continue to roll out our load control program that we have been working on the last 2 years, hopefully we can bring that number down closer to neutral. Last item I'd like to point out is the implementation plan. Again, October 20th, this is the letter we received, also October 2020. October 2020, discussed time of use rates at area meetings. If any of the commissioners were on the area meetings, it was talked about there. And November 2020, develop informational page on the Missouri website. And then you can see from February 2021 until 2023, some of the work that they're going to do in rolling out time of use rates at a wholesale level. So with that, Commissioner Chair, I'll open it up and try to find any additional questions that the board may have.
Commissioners, any questions on the time of use rate that's being proposed out of Missouri River?
Yeah, this is Zach. John, my question is first, what is TOU mean? Kind of didn't give us any definition.
Yep, time of use.
Oh, time of use. Yep. Wow. Okay. The other question I have is, we used to have something called S1. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that's replacing the S1.
No. S1 is our wholesale power supply contract. That spells out all the provisions and terms of our wholesale requirements. And within the S1 contract are the rates. And our rates are going from where we are today. We sort of have a form of time of use rates already. They're just breaking it down some more. Right now we pay winter, summer, fall, different rates. Now they're implementing time of day, blocks of time of day as well. So it's not a true time of use where every hour we're paying something different. They're still keeping it in blocks, but our rates are part of the S1 contract.
So it's actually TOU is part of S1 contract. Is that correct? Because I was kind of a little bit reading it. It was a little bit confusing.
Yes. No, Commissioner Mabu, that would be correct. Time of use. If you look at the document under previous board, they spell out time of use the first time they use it, and time of use is part of the rates that we are charged for our wholesale power, and our rates are built into the S1 contract.
Got it. And that's actually then we are. Then why is the additional $12,878 that we're using because of the time of use constraint? Is that what's causing that extra for us to pay?
Oh, very good question, Commissioner Mabu. The $12,000 has to do with how and when we use power. When they're looking at their new rate structure for time of use rates, our cost of wholesale power changes based on the time of day and the season that we use more or less power than what we use today under our present rate structure. Our rates today change, like I said, from month to month, and our demand changes from month, well, in blocks of month. It changes. Mm-hmm. Over time, it's like 20. Oh, hang on, I can tell you. An example, our rates right now in the S1 contract, as they're spelled out, the summer months are June, July, and August. We pay a $21 demand charge. December, January, and February, we pay a $16 demand charge. And March, April, May, September, October, November, we pay $10.50 demand charge. So that's our rate structure today plus kilowatts. So, like I said, we got a form of time of use today as we speak, because those different months, it's really not time, it's time of use, but it's by the month. Now they're going to drill that down, and they're adding additional layers that are going to be drilling it down by the time of day. So certain times a day in block, we're going to be paying different rates.
So this is actually additional cost to them because of TOU.
Yes, we are based on 2019 KWH that we consumed and the demand we consumed and the time of day that we consumed it. We will have an additional $12,887 in wholesale power supply costs with this transition. Now, with that said, the reason that our power supply, or part of the reason that our power supply costs will go up, like I said earlier, when they did the rate study from a Missouri River level, they're trying to stay revenue neutral. That's just like here, when we do a rate study, when we make some changes and we try to stay revenue neutral, it's not revenue neutral for every customer. In this case, our load factor is lower than the average Missouri River member. Therefore, our power supply costs slightly pushed under the time of use rates.
Okay, it's kind of a little bit complex. Thanks, John.
It's very, I'd be more, Commissioner Mabu, I'd be more than happy to spend more time with you and kind of show you full detail if you're looking for it. But yeah, it's complicated.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Raboob, and to General Manager Heron for the additional description there. Commissioners, any other questions on this? All right, hearing none, we'll move into the next agenda item. Item number 5 is the approval of our 2021 consultant listing. General Manager Heron.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. What we have here each year, this is, I'm going to say, the fourth year running. The commission has asked us to bring forward a consulting list of consultants and or projects that we know of at this time of year for the upcoming year. By policy, we are required to bring projects to the commission or our consulting services fees will be over $5,000. So this list here identifies some of the projects that we are aware of at this point in time and the approximate dollar amount. So by approving this list, as these projects come up, there's no additional commission action that's required. As they come up, we will move forward with these projects and complete them. Well, projects that are not on this list, again, we'll continue to bring forward.
John, is there anything on this list that's out of the ordinary?
No, the only thing that would be out of the ordinary, but it's not on this list, we had additional consulting costs for our power supply over the years and our power plant work. With going over to Missouri River, we do not have those costs anymore, so they were removed from this list. Otherwise, everything else on this list is has been there, or it's been there on a given year and off. Example, some of our Burns and McDowell, some of that isn't every year. So some years it's on, some years it's off, but it's coming up again, so.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, I'd be looking for a resolution for approval of this consultant list for 2021.
So move.
Second.
I've got a resolution from Commissioner DeBleek and a second from Commissioner Magnuson. Any discussion on the resolution? All right, hearing none, Ms. Mathiason, if you could take roll, please.
Certainly. Commissioner Magnuson?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lahmer?
Aye.
Mabu?
Aye.
Weber?
Aye.
DeBleek?
Aye.
Thank you.
That resolution passes. Thank you. All right, next on the agenda, we have our 2020 strategic initiative update, and I'll pass this over to Mr. Marty.
Thank you, Chair Mattern. As you see, you have the update for our strategic initiatives. If you want to scroll down, Mike. The updates, the actual strategic initiatives stay the same. Just with an updated update date of today. And we'll show you the updates to our tasks in red in the document so they're a little bit easier to pop out at you. If you want to go ahead, Mike. If you'll have to scroll slowly here. This is our first task is the admin and operations building. As I mentioned, the items in the actual SWOT boxes, strength, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats stay the same. you go page, you scroll down, Mike. And then there are tasks associated with those SWOT items. And if you'll go split the page, Mike, if you can. And these are the updates. So the updates in black were updates from the last meeting or previous updates. And then anything in red is a new update. And on this particular section, most of this work has been put on hold due to COVID restrictions and changes to our budgets. So the only thing that's happened here is that we've had some initial discussions with the city in conjunction with their Opportunity Zone project that they have going on, that they may be interested in doing a potential land swap in the future. They would take our properties in our current locations and then potentially swap that for acreage, a 10, 12 acres, whatever we may need in with of city-owned land moving forward. So that may come up again as those discussions pick up again, if we're able to pick up the building project in 2021. Go ahead, Mike, to the next. The next one is financial position. We'll go down the updates on this particular section. We had the electric customer revenue is down approximately $1 million year to date. And I believe that will get taken up here in the next few, a little bit later on this morning here in another presentation. And then the rate studies on task four, the current rate study, as you know, goes through 2023. And then we anticipate picking up another rate study and looking at it in late 2022 or early 2023. Okay, Mike, move ahead. Next is generation. This has to do with gas, diesel, and power plant. So we've got some updates here on the plant decommissioning. Of course, that was decommissioned on June 30th, 2020. And we have recently finished up the environmental studies, and that will be moving to a planning committee very shortly. And then on task two, that had to do with local generation. We had the project that we talked about this past summer about rental generation. If we had a catastrophic event, we'd bring in rental generation as needed. So there's some planning that has to do with the connections into our system on that project. It was determined that we would split up, if we bring in these rentals, we'd split them up into two different locations, not to have all eggs in one basket. And that's gonna be at the power plant substation. So that portion of the project is on hold and is part of the work that they're engineering right now. For the changes to our power plant substation. And then the work to the south substation, that design is in progress. So we'll know how to bring in those rental generation units there and tie into our system. So engineering is working on that project currently. So go ahead, Mike.
Do we have a timeline on that project?
Was there a timeline? Is that the question?
Yeah, I was under the impression that the tie-ins for any temporary generation, given a catastrophic event, would be somewhat easier than the way you made it sound.
Well, yes and no. There is a way. Our goal is to make those tie-ins a little bit more permanent. So when we do, or if we would need to call in rental generation, they'd be able to back them up and basically plug them in. And that all of that infrastructure would be there. There is a way to do it currently as we speak today. If we need that equipment, we just have to rent a little bit more equipment. We'd have to rent the transformers and the cabling, and they would tie into our existing substations. So we can do it today as is. It just takes a little bit more equipment on Ziegler's part. We would have to let them know that. And then once this second phase of our a little bit more permanent tie-ins are put in that we're a little bit more comfortable with, then we kind of take off the items that I need list when I call you, basically. We'll only be bringing in the diesel units and not all the other gobbledygook, the generator, the transformers and cables and all that. So
Kevin,
that's kind of like where that's lying.
A little bit, maybe. I don't know if we're hitting Commissioner Weber's question here. And Jaron, I see you're on the line too. So by all means, chime in as appropriate. But part of the reason, Nate, that we're holding off on our power plant substation is that substation's being moved. When I get to my general manager's report, you're going to hear me say that we're in the process of setting up a meeting with the planning committee. So we don't want to spend a lot of money with permanent infrastructure here at our power plant substation. So Jaron and Todd, they worked on, and Kevin worked on basically cataloging what is needed. And we will be hooking in on a temporary basis if we need it. They're looking at what we need and putting that together. So it's there, it's ready. If we got to hook in, we have what we need, and we're going to hook in more on a temporary basis, as Kevin was alluding to. However, over at the substation is a different one that's more permanent, and that is being worked on as we speak, basically.
Okay. So sorry to interrupt. It's probably not, I don't know if it's appropriate to bring this up at this time, but I guess I would like to see somewhat of a timeline, you know, that this is ready to go given an event. Sure. I guess this is a little bit of a news to me on that we're still having work to do on this. So Mr. Chair, if this is going to be taken care of in the planning committee, that would be fine. I would look for an update from the planning committee on the next meeting.
Mr. Heron, could I request that be brought forward then to the next planning committee? Is it ready for that? Or where's the timeline on how it can be brought into planning?
No, excellent questions, Commissioner Weber, Commissioner Mattern. I'll have Jaron and Todd put together an outline of when this project will be completed at Southwest, as well as what's been inventoried or cataloged as needed equipment to hook in on a temporary basis at our power plant sub. And then we'll talk a little bit about when we anticipate our power plant sub to be moved permanent with permanent connections for portable power generation as well.
That'd be good. I think moving forward with just getting additional information on this would be helpful, and making sure that we're not letting this kind of linger too long. I know when we had requested that this move forward, that there was not a huge sense of urgency, but we didn't want to put this off too long either, as we felt it was an important asset to the community.
Well, we shall do. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Marty, if you'd like to continue, please.
Thank you. And I don't know if Jaron wants to add anything to that, but like I mentioned, I believe that we're able to bring in those units in today if we need them. It's just the connections are not a permanent connection, but we can count on that portable power in case of a catastrophic event.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit. So like Kevin said, in the event of a transmission supply failure where we need to generate our own power, we would have to contact Ziegler and get some rental units. Well, talking with them, you know, as we presented to the commission earlier, the units typically aren't just sitting in their, you know, storage area ready to roll. A lot of times they're at some other customer site being used, or they need to work within their network to get them from farther out. So they don't have, you know, units dedicated to us for emergency events. So with that, we don't exactly know what we're going to get. And so we don't know what kind of connections we need to be prepared for. So, you know, like Kevin said, depending on what units we get, we would have to either create the cabling, rent the cabling, purchase the cabling to interconnect with our system. And we're trying to identify maybe the most likely scenarios and the optimum level of preparedness versus, you know, putting in a lot of effort that won't work. So that's where we're at, and we're evaluating how that will work. In the end, if it needs to get done, it will get done, but we want to see if there's opportunity to make kind of a plug-and-play system, and that we're still researching.
Thank you for the additional update, Mr. Smith. I hope that that offers a little bit of sense of peace of mind here, but we do look forward to a continued update through the planning committee.
Okay.
All right, Mr. Marty, continue. All
right. Thank you. So the next section is the generation renewable energy. Not a whole lot of updates here. We've talked about the wind turbines here in the past few meetings. The only update to the strategic plan is that they're another year older. So entering year 12 now of the 20-year life expectancy. So go ahead, Mike. Substations and transmission projects. We have an update here that Benson Area Transmission Plan currently is in the design stages. The first step of that will be the transformer spec, and that's in a draft state, and we're hoping that those specs are released for proposals by the end of 2020 or first of 2021. So that project is moving along in design. Go ahead, Mike. And then the water system. Update here is that on June 8th, the commission authorized Corollo to complete the design, and they are working with the water department to do so. That project is in process also. So that is the update. Actually, scroll a little bit more, Mike. We do have a staff. We do have a staff recommendation that we'd like to float across your bow here a little bit. In our spring of 21 update, I believe it would be due in May again, we would like to actually go through the entire strategic plan and update the SWOT categories. That was last done in September of 2019, and there are a few, especially on the power plant, obviously, there are a few of those SWOT categories that are either that project is done or they're no longer relevant. So we would like to do that in the spring of 21 strategic plan update. We'll go through the entire plan again, and then we'll have that brought back to you for approval.
I think that would certainly make sense to so this would be more of a full overview.
Correct. We would actually look at the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, and go through each category obviously and make sure if something is still relevant or not. Like for example, in the power plant category, well, it's not really relevant to us anymore that the, you know, that we have a power supply agreement for the power plant, because that's been decommissioned along with, you know, the gas supply and all those sorts of things. There are just certain items in there that are no longer viable, I guess, or don't pertain to us anymore. And there may be some new things. I know that there's been a handful of new things that we've talked at staff level at the next, on the next update that we'll be adding in different categories. So.
Okay. Yeah. I think going through and kind of refreshing things and getting a good thorough overview again would be a good thing.
Okay.
We can look forward to that sometime spring of next year, if possible.
Is there any other questions on the rest of the update?
Doesn't look like it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that update. All right. Moving into the next item on the agenda, we have an update on the COVID-19 financial impact. And we have our new energy safety outreach coordinator, Chris Radel. Is it Radel? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Radel, actually.
Radel. You want to give us a brief introduction of yourself, Chris?
Sure. Thank you very much, Chair Mattern. Nice to meet all of you commissioners. Sadly, not in person, but hopefully someday, not too soon, we can be together to visit each other and see each other in person. My name is Christopher Rudell. I was raised here in Wilmer. I moved abroad for a little while and just recently came back, and I'm very excited to be here at this position at the WMU, learning all about energy and safety here and getting my feet wet while I'm running around here, figuring things out. So without further ado, we can go into this update. And if you guys do have questions, feel free to interrupt. I might not have all the answers. I've tried to get this information as clear as possible, but John or maybe Jaron could answer some of those questions if I can't. So Mike, if you wouldn't mind, go down to the next page. On the first page here, we have an overview of the late charges in 2019 and 2020. And the big important information that I'd like to have everyone pay attention to is that in 2020, 5 out of the 8 months that we have up in this table, late charges were higher. And significantly, if you look on the left-hand side, June 2020 was significantly higher than June of 2019. With that information, you can see on the right-hand side at the very bottom of the table, it says that the total is 21.8%, or the total late charges for 2020 are 21.8% higher than 2019. And in addition, all of these late charges have been waived. So we'll get into a little bit more of that information a little later. Mike, could you go to the next page? Here we have the graphs of the past dues for electricity only. On the left, top left, you see 30 days, top right is 60 days, and the bottom right is 90 days. What we can kind of see is that there are some similarities in these graphs, but the orange line, which is 2020, is higher than the blue line, which is 2019. Basically, in the bottom left-hand corner, you can see that with a 30-day graph, currently we are, as of September, 2020 is about $25,000 higher than September of 2019. 60 days is $10,000 higher, and then 90 days past due is about $26,000, $27,000 higher than a year ago at this time. So we can see that all past dues are higher for electricity. Mike, could you go forward? This slide is specifically talking about our demand. On the left-hand side, we have demand. The time period is January to March, and it's cut up in 3 different sections. An average of 2014 to 2019 on the top, what the demand was specifically in 2019 between January and March, and on the bottom, our demand this year between January and March. So you can see the average period of 2014 to 2019 is 34.3 megawatts. It's the exact same for 2019, but for 2020, it is about 1.9 megawatts lower. This is based essentially, or with some of my colleagues, we believe that it's because 2020 was a bit warmer than 2019, which may have offset some of the demand needs during that period. On the right side of the table, we see the same time frame, except that we're looking from March to September in that 5-year period on the first table, March to September 2019, and March to September 2020. In these averages, we see on the top that the 5-year average is 32.8 megawatts, then 32 megawatts for 2019, and finally 31.4 megawatts for 2020. And this is essentially saying that we've decreased about 4.3% for megawatt demand in the 6-year average prior. So generally speaking, both in January to March, we had lower demand, and March to September, we had lower demand. Please continue, Mike. Here is what we're just looking at, sales. And on the right-hand side, we can see the table that 2019 February to September sales is roughly 2% higher than 2020 February to September sales. So we are down in sales about 2%. However, in the table below that, we can see that we are 5.3% higher sales for residential sales and 8.1% lower in commercial and industrial sales. So we are lower by 2%, but we are higher in residential and lower in commercial. Next, Mike. So our electricity, like I said before, was roughly 2% lower. And as you can see here on the table on your right-hand side, our revenue is roughly 2% lower as well. So that matches up pretty accurately. And again, the residential revenue on the bottom table is 6% higher, while the commercial and industrial revenue is lower by 4.9%. Go ahead, Mike. So we just looked at electricity. Now here's the past due for water. Water, as you can see, is we have the 30-day on the top left, the 60-day, the 90-day. And again, the graphs are looking somewhat similar in the comparison between 2019 and 2020, with the exception of the 30-day. All of you, I'm sure, can notice that huge spike. That is the June-July pay period, roughly about 3 or 4 months right after the COVID stay-at-home orders happened. Basically, on the bottom left-hand side, we can see that past due for 30 days was $4,400, roughly. 60 days was $3,000, and 90 days was $6,700. So again, the graphs are similar, but again, all past dues are higher this year compared to last year. Next page, Mike. In the next page, we're looking at sales. And here, in total sales, we are very similar to where we've been in the past year. From February to September, we're only about 1% less in 2020 as compared to 2019. With that being said, if you look at the bottom table, residential sales of water is very high at 18.2%, while commercial and industrial sales of water is down 7.3%. Next page. So after going over the sales of water, which we saw was 1% lower than 2020, we're going into the revenue on this slide. Now here, our revenue is 17.5% higher than last year. And that is even though we had 1% decrease in water sales. The reason for that is in January 1st of 2020, I believe it was the commission that approved of increasing the rate of water by 20%. So with all things being equal, if we had the same amount of consumption in 2019 as 2020, our revenue should be 20% higher. And here it is only 17.5% higher. It is 2.5% lower than what we expected it to be. And on the bottom, you can see on the bottom table on the right-hand side, you can see that the residential revenue is 30% higher than it was, and commercial and industrial is 11% higher than it was. Next page. On this page, on this slide, we're looking at the potential financial losses that COVID has or could inflict. On the left-hand side, we have the item of what this could occur. In the middle is the estimated cost. And I'm not exactly sure when this estimated cost was implemented, but it was, I think it was at the beginning of the year, if I'm not mistaken. And on the right-hand side, we have the costs up to September 30th. So on the second column in the table, late fees to date, you can look at the far right side, and that is that $260,491 that have been waived. So these were all the late fees, the electric late fees and the water late fees combined that have been waived. Below that is the bankruptcy losses. These are on the right hand side of the bankruptcy losses. This is the 90-day delinquencies that are approximately $33,383 higher than in September 19, 2019. And we've had two bankruptcies notices. One of them was JCPenney's, and I believe the other one was a small business, smaller business. Then we have reduced customer revenue sales. On the right-hand side, we have approximately $1,035,000 of electric reduced customer revenue. And finally, on the very bottom of this table, the total potential financial losses on the right-hand side, adding up all those numbers in red, comes to $1,295,000, roughly. On the last page. So this is a summary, and most of this has not changed at all from the last time you've seen this PowerPoint or this presentation, except at the very bottom. The very bottom, you can see that there's two bullet points, and it says that the Willmar Municipal Utility has received $8,400 in CARE dollars via the CARE Act. So that is money that we have in hand that we received for assistance for people who are having trouble paying whatever fees. And in addition to that $8,400, we've received thousands of dollars of requests for additional CARE dollars, but they haven't been filed or finalized yet. I don't know if we have a steady number or a sure number on what those that dollar amount would be. But I think Janelle might have an idea in regards to that.
Hi, thanks, Chris. No, we do not have an estimate of the dollars that they have requested information on yet. They come in single emails on the customers. So the CARES Act, the county will want to know the situation on John Doe. We respond to that information. And we have numerous emails, and we're constantly responding to requests from the county. So the money does keep coming in, and these people are getting assistance.
So either Janelle or Chris, the CARE dollars that we have received, $8,400, has that been credited to individual customer accounts?
Yes. Yes. As it comes in, it gets credited to their account. Now, this information that Chris is looking at is as of September 30th. And so the CARE dollars actually just started coming in, I would say mid to late October. So I think the next time we go through this exercise, some of these numbers will hopefully be changing quite a bit. But the CARES Act does end December 31st. And so we're really pushing people to get in there and take advantage of the situation.
And these dollars
to help. Yes.
These dollars are currently distributed by the EDC?
Yeah, because I know everything's coming from the county under the CHAP program.
And to be clear, we have not received this money directly at the utilities. It's going to the customers on behalf of their accounts.
Yes, it comes and goes directly to their account, yes.
Okay, thank you. All right. Mr. Riddell, we appreciate the update on this. It was thorough and informational. I appreciate that. Commissioners, any other questions on this report?
Mr. Chair, in addition of the $8,400, wasn't there also $20,000 from one of the churches that donated us? Was it that long time ago, or in addition? You know, I was wondering that would be added to that, no?
To answer your question, Commissioner Mabu, yes, that $20,000 was received and applied to accounts. And so this 8,400 is in addition. And I believe on, since Chris gave this information, we've received another roughly 2,500.
Good question. Commissioners, any other questions?
I do have one.
Go ahead.
I guess I'd like to have a little discussion around the transfer of money from the catastrophic fund balance. Is that what we're looking at doing here to make up that difference, or what's the thought process behind that?
Commissioner Magnuson, that's a very good question. At this point in time, hopefully we don't have to dip into our catastrophic event fund. We scaled back on some of our capital projects as the first resource for additional funding. We went into this project with a very solid financial position. But those dollars, when we put this together, we wanted the commission to be aware of the fact that we do have a catastrophic event fund. When the fund was created, it wasn't necessarily created for a COVID scenario, but COVID, I believe, meets that definition of a catastrophic event because it is, it does have a long lasting and to some degree a detrimental effect on us. And there's $3 million there. So we started, $3 million have been appropriated for that purpose. So at the end of the day or end of the year, when it comes, if we start running short on dollars in our fund balance, because we weren't able to offset those dollars through reduced capital projects and O&M, there is $3 million there that we can utilize to help offset some of those costs, which in turn, then at end of the year, we'd have to reduce our catastrophic event fund to $2,500,000 roughly.
Okay, so that would be used if we had a loss this year to offset a loss or transfer money into the operating account because we need funds to operate.
Commissioner Magnuson, if I understand your question correctly, I believe, yes, we would reduce our designated catastrophic event fund and transfer that money to our O&M fund.
Okay.
At this point, we have not brought that forward to the commission yet, as we don't see a need to having to do that. As we are sitting right now, if we back up, what were we sitting, 1.3? Let me go back to that slide. I think. Yeah, we're sitting at 1.29 right now is what our estimated losses are. So,
losses just because of COVID, but not losses that we're gonna show for a fiscal year end, correct?
No, that would be including all of it. COVID, depending on how you want to define it, COVID losses, but our revenue sales are down. Our kilowatt sales are down. Therefore, our revenue is down. It's all contributed as we're defining it as COVID. And the demand slide that Jaron, put together tracks for us. Going into COVID, we were slightly down on the demand side going into COVID. So even when you take that into consideration, we're significantly down from there, which is COVID-related.
COVID-related, but are you projecting a loss for this year from a revenue income to expense, or are we projecting a profit?
At this point in time, I would say we're still projecting a profit.
Okay.
Good question, Commissioner Magnuson. I think, as this discussion continues and we start to get a better handle towards the end of the year of where we're looking, certainly if there are opportunities for additional cuts, probably a little late this year, but if we have to consider that for next year, I think that would be something to look at. And also, instead of pulling out of the catastrophic fund balance, if there's opportunities to just eat some of that out of the profit, I think that's some discussion that needs to be had as well as we move forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Matter. Mike, if I could ask you to back up one slide to potential financial losses, might provide some additional information to the commission. On this slide, you can see what we anticipated as our estimated losses in that middle column. So that's where that $3 million is coming from. What we don't know, and hopefully we don't get to the $3 million, but bankruptcies, I don't believe that we even touched a bankruptcy losses yet that we are going to be seeing. They're going to be coming more than likely next year. And our reduced revenue sales, you know, where are we going to end it up? We ended up projecting 1.6. We're sitting at 1 million right now. And if you go to the bottom number, you know, we're looking at 3 million going into this, that what COVID could have on our, on the financial impact of the utilities. We're sitting at about the midpoint at this point in time. So we're halfway to hitting the losses that we projected going into COVID last March when this started. So that's where we're at this point in time. No, we don't anticipate revenue loss or financial loss in our operations. But the way things are going, COVID isn't over yet either. So at this point, it looks like our losses will be split between this year and next year, as the first of the year is very close and we all know where we are at today. And it doesn't appear that there's going to be much improvement, at least in the short term, in the next couple months. So I believe we're going to continue to see reduced sales, reduced revenues, and bankruptcies are going to be coming in next year. And those numbers, or that number, is going to be considerably higher than where we are today.
I think to that point, John, you know, my concern is that the financial impact could potentially be even greater next year than it has been this year. And so again, we just need to keep an eye on what that might look like and what we need to do next year for whether it's additional cuts or other considerations as well. Yeah. I think I heard Commissioner Maboob, and maybe it was Commissioner Lahmer wanted to jump in here. Commissioner Maboob, did you have a question?
Yeah, I had a question. Just for a refresher, I know that we have a catastrophic fund of $3 million allocated. Is this a fund, you know, locked into $3 million, or just get a refreshment? Is it, or this is something that, you know, we build onto, or is it locked to $3 million only? But or we can expand it as we make more profit to allocate it more for a catastrophic fund.
Andrew, you want me to take that question? Okay. Excellent question, Commissioner Maboob. Last year, or maybe it was a year before, 2 years ago, we had $2 million designated as a catastrophic event fund. Due to the cost of some of the events that are going on across the nation, $2 million will not take us very far if there is some sort of catastrophic event fund. So we increase that to $3 million. At staff level, we are looking at a need to actually increase that by another million yet as the funds become available. So, you know, $3 million a lot in our operation. Again, we're self-insured here for our distribution system. So if we got an ice storm, tornado, go through and take down our distribution system, we are talking lots of money. Will FEMA step in? Hopefully, but in the interim, we need to be able to cover part of or all of those costs in the interim until we submit and FEMA dollars become available, if they become available. So $3 million isn't a lot. We don't want to drain that reserve down. As one of the commissioners noted earlier, you know, do we need to look at next year's capital projects and or operations to see, you know, if we're properly and appropriately addressing the concerns that we have before us as we continue to go through COVID here and the impact that it's having on our operation. So no, it's a very, very legitimate concern here, our budgets and how they're being impacted. And do we need to do an additional, you know, cutbacks on projects as we go into next year? And at staff level, we will be looking at that and we'll be discussing that further.
Other industries, you know, is it common that you mentioned now to increase another million, make it 4 million? Is it possible just to continue this catastrophic fund, keep on building as we make profit, you know, that make it like a, you know, annually growing as much as we can, not really limiting to any number, 4 or 5 or 6 million. Is that a possibility?
Commissioner Mabula, excellent question. And yes, as costs go up every year, we want to increase that slightly. That number, you know, was held at $2 million for many years. And as we started looking at that number at staff level, we said $2 million will not get us started on a major catastrophic event fund. And that's why we increased it by $1 million. As funds become available, the way it looks this year, we might not be able to increase that by another $1 million like we did last year. But if we can increase it slightly, we maybe will. At the end of the year, we may not. Once we have our year-end reports all in, we will be coming with a recommendation to the commission to either leave that number as is, increase it, or decrease it. That recommendation typically comes before the commission once our audit is completed. So it's probably be in April, first meeting in April, our audit. Andrea, do we have our audit scheduled? I think it's what, second meeting in April, maybe? Our second meeting in March. So it'll be the meeting or two meetings following our audit review with the commission when staff will have their recommendation for allocations of our designated funds.
Thank you.
Welcome, Commissioner Mabu.
Commissioner Lammer, did you have a question?
Yeah, a couple of questions. Are we still continuing to waive the late fees? And are you projecting when you would implement those back in? And then for the people that have had issues paying their bill and ran to the, I want to say Lehigh, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Are we seeing from some of those people that had trouble with their bills over the summer and you didn't disconnect them, are they now becoming eligible for some of that money?
Commissioner Lermer, excellent questions. Staff has done an excellent job here, in my opinion, working with customers, trying to motivate them and encourage them to pay so they don't get so far behind. For the details of that, if I could turn this over to Janelle Johnson to talk about some of the details of where we were at with LIHEAT, I will do that. Before I do that, the short answer to late fees, yes, we are still required to do that. In fact, I was called this week by our local representative, making sure that we were still doing it, being that the governor continues to extend the COVID relief funds that we got going on here. His pandemic extends the pandemic. So with that, if I can turn it over to Janelle to talk a little bit about where LIHEAT applications are.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity here to explain. The EHEAT applications with the UCAP, those applications are coming through again. That money just became available again, I believe October 1st. So many of these customers who were delinquent are getting help through the EHEAT system and then also this CHAPS program. Customers have been very good, actually, about making payment arrangements. We started robocalling to remind delinquent customers of their past due amounts, and the response really has been very good. And it's been when they call back because they're getting the robocall, it's been giving us an opportunity to talk directly to the customer, to explain the programs out there, and get them some help. Now, this CHAPS program is focusing on those people that really are not qualified for a UCAP or HEAT assistance because their income level is a little too high. And so that's the group we're really pushing towards, this CHAPS program also, because normally they are in an income level where they don't qualify for assistance. And we do have a number of our customers going down that avenue now, once we're able to have that verbal communication with them and explain it. It's really been a good thing. Customers have been very responsive and as well as making payment arrangements. And it's been a good thing in a hard time.
Thank you.
I'll expand a little bit to Commissioner Lamar's question about the LIHEAT program. We received a letter from Department of Commerce, October 19th. And it states in there, it's a lengthy letter, so I'm not going to read it all, but regarding the LIHEAT applications, in that letter that says in there that the LIHEAP applications are lagging previous years. Customers' awareness of the moratorium on service disconnects is what's driving the lagging of applications. So we got to find a way to motivate customers to get in. So I don't know if that's, you know, where Wilmer falls in those stats, but that's coming out of the state of Minnesota. In general, applications are down requesting assistance.
All right, thank you for those updates. Commissioners, any final questions on the COVID-19 financial impact update? All right, Mr. Riddell, thank you so much for the update on that and welcome aboard again. Appreciate having you with us. Next on the agenda, we have another Joe Schmidt silent impact resolution update. And did we miss the month of October? Is that what this one is for?
Yes, Chair Mattern, we did get them mixed up and October was jumped over. However, Joe's message is on the grind. Again, it's an excellent message. I think everybody can gain good information out of. So with that, Michael, let you start it.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Joe Schmidt here with your impact resolution for the month of October. And in the month of October, we're going to concentrate on the grind. That's right. You heard me. The grind. The fastest horse doesn't always win the race. The most talented team doesn't always win the championship. The smartest person in the room doesn't always get the promotion or get the deal. Many, many times it's the person who grinds the most, who grinds the hardest and is the most consistent. They are gritty. They plug along in every day they work on their why. It's not easy. It's not pretty, but it works. In 2017, my daughter, Gabby, graduated from the University of Wisconsin. And the commencement speaker that year was Steve Levitan. I don't know if you've heard that name before. He is the guy who invented the hit TV show Modern Family, and he was a UW graduate. His speech stood out for two reasons. One, he said, "I'm not one of those chase your dreams kind of speakers. For all I know, your dreams are stupid." He used that Modern Family sense of humor in his commencement speech. But he talked about the grind, and he talked about every day getting up and working on your why. He said that he had 8 shows that were picked up by the networks and canceled after one season. So in other words, he had 8 failures before he decided to fail for a 9th time. The 9th time was Modern Family. It ran on TV for 11 years and won 22 Emmys. The grind works. It's not pretty, but it works. Every day when you work on your why and you grind and you're scrappy and you're gritty, who knows? Someday you might be an overnight sensation. That's our impact resolution for the month of October. Go out and grind and make an impact.
There we go. Nothing like a little determination to continue on, huh? All right. Thank you for that update. And we will move into the general manager's report.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Mattern. With that, I'd first like to say thank you to the commission for supporting, changes, closing the office again and supporting changes here with our staffing to keep our staff safe. As we know, hospitals are bulging at the seams and we want to be part of the solution as well. So we anticipate that we'll probably be in Zoom mode here till January sometime or later. We'll kind of see how things come together over the holidays. So we anticipate this to be the norm for a while. I agree with many of you. It's nicer to be in person, but in the times we're in today, like I said, we need to do our part. With that said, we're also looking at additional staff measures from what we were doing to keep everybody healthy. And not sure what that's going to look like yet, but we will keep you posted as we work through that. We started talking about it last week. We had another meeting this morning with our subset of the management team, and hopefully before Wednesday here of this week, we're going to be implementing additional measures to maintain the safety of staff, to make sure staff is comfortable with those changes that we're going to implement, and that we are able to provide the services to this community that they continue to expect from us here at the utility. So appreciate your support as we go forward here. And as appropriate, you know, if there's additional information that the commission should be aware of, we'll be pushing that information out. With that said, as we go on to other agenda items that are listed, we got a meeting set up, Labor Committee meeting, as Commissioner Weber noted, or he didn't note the meeting, but he noted the upcoming labor relations coming on December 1st. We also have a meeting set up on November 5th to talk about labor negotiations and what that's going to look like, and also the RECS program. We will be setting up a planning committee meeting as well. Beth will be pushing that out. Beth and I spoke this morning, so as soon as she has time here today or tomorrow, she'll be pushing that out as well. Again, we're going to be talking about the substation, as we mentioned in the PowerPoints, with hooking up the temporaries. We'll be talking about that as well as our power plant, Winks report on our phase one and phase two, and also some work that needs to be done in the water department with our risk and resilient assessment. That's something new that we need to have done here by July 1st. So look for those as we go forward here on the planning committee side of things. So other than that, that would conclude my update. Unless there's questions, I'd be more than happy to field some questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Herron. Commissioners, any questions on the update? All right. I appreciate everybody sticking in there today and hanging in there through a little longer meeting. Commissioner Lahmer, we wish you a happy birthday.
Thank you.
Is there any other business?
Great day so far.
Excellent. Any other business to come before the commission today? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
And with that, this meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, everyone.